Let's go, girls.
You're listening to Eco Frenzy,
University Radio Nottingham's official sustainability podcast.
Listen live on Saturdays from 3 to 4pm on urn1350.net.
DJ!
This is URN
University
Radio
Nottingham.
You're listening to University Radio Nottingham. It's 3 minutes past 3 and it's time for Eco Frenzy.
Woo!
We've been gone for the winter, we'll call it. I was going to say the summer. We've been gone for the winter and now we're back. We had a Christmas break. We had a January break, but the girlies are here.
We're back.
And we're thriving.
We really are. As you can check on our new Instagram post, we're back. We're better than ever.
Gabby, how would they find our Instagram post?
They can find our Instagram post at EcoFrenzyURN.
Wow.
I put a lot of effort into the reel that I posted about 2 hours ago.
And it looks snazzy. It's really cool.
Thanks, guys. Thanks.
And it's got me in it, so.
It's got all of us in it and all of our pets.
Oh, yes. So true.
Yeah.
And other little plugs just while we get the show started. If you want to message in at any point, if you're listening on urn1350.net, there's the message to show function and we will see all your messages as they come up. Ooh, someone's already sent in that they love our reel, so thank you very much. So yeah, make use of that as you like, and we'll try and get to all your comments and all your questions as they come up. Another thing to plug is, if you ever miss an episode of Eco Frenzy, we are out on Spotify, Apple Music, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us on the URN feed, which if you just type in URN or University Radio Nottingham, you should be able to find it, but you have to do a little bit of scrolling. So we suggest you just look up Eco Frenzy on your favourite podcast platform, and we will come up with all our episodes.
And rate it 5 stars.
Oh yeah, and rate it 5 stars. Rate it leave 5 a comment stars.
If you're not gonna rate it 5 stars, don't bother.
We don't actually want you listening.
Don't want you listening to it.
We don't need the numbers.
No we don't.
So
we don't. We have a small but dedicated fan base of our mothers,
exactly.
And well, fathers and family members.
Right, that was not as funny as we found it.
No, it was not.
I think we're all just a bit excited to be back. And what are we talking about this week? Gabby, I think you've got the schedule up.
I do have the schedule up. This week, we're talking pollution problems for LGBTQ plus History Month.
Woo.
Because we felt like we should mention it, because there's a lot the gays have done for the environment.
It's shocking.
It is. To be fair, it is pretty shocking. So you've got that to look forward to as our last segment today. Keep you listening. But we're starting off today with a little post-Christmas catch-up. Georgia, how are you feeling post-Christmas?
Whew. Environmentally, I'm feeling a bit rough. Ooh. I am feeling a bit guilty, I have to say. I'll put my hands up and say I probably wasn't the most environmentally friendly this Christmas because I did do a lot of driving. I put in those miles. I use a lot of fuel, and it's not great for the environment to be using my car as much as I did, but I have no excuse.
But you were designated driver for your family members over Christmas.
I was, and
so
I...
it was one use of a car rather than multiple, like, people driving all to the same place.
True. That is true. I feel guilty about it because I feel like there could have been some journeys that I could have combined, in the sense that I went and saw some people in like the same location but in different weekends, so like, yeah. I could have seen them all in one weekend rather than make the journey to the same place.
Plus, that's a lot of effort emotionally. That's a lot of socialising, Georgia.
Yeah, and gosh. It's a lot of organisation as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. But, you know, I endeavour to be better. Aww. When I earn more money, I'm going to get an electric car, so...
Support that.
Yeah.
Support that. Erin, how are you feeling environmentally post-Christmas?
I'm feeling all right, actually. I felt this Christmas we really had a handle on food waste. Felt like... One of my big things after Christmas is always, we ate a lot of food, but also we didn't eat a lot of food.
Mm.
So there's not just that sort of physical, I ate so much food kind of feeling, but often I feel like we wasted quite a lot. And I really think this year we did a lot better. We didn't have our kitchen in, so we didn't have a kitchen for Christmas, so we barbecued quite a lot.
Ooh.
I don't know the environmental effects of barbecuing versus things like an oven. I can imagine it's very similar sort of effect, because you're still using, we have a gas barbecue, so you're still using gas. Yeah.
I was going to say, if it was charcoal barbecue, maybe
it's a bit better, but we don't have, no, it's a gas one, sadly. But I felt like because we were limited maybe on space and things like that, it was very much buying what we wanted and what we were really going to use. My mum and my dad organised sort of like the 3 days of Christmas, went out and bought the food that we would need, and we ate it all. And not in a excessive, we have to eat everything, otherwise we're, you know, otherwise whatever. I don't even know what the alternative is. It wasn't like, oh, we have to eat this food because we've got it. It was just everything got eaten and there wasn't much food waste, which, as I say, I think previous years that's been a bit of an issue that we haven't necessarily consciously thought about. And I don't know if my mum did that on purpose or what was going on, but it's just something I personally noticed, so I felt quite good about that. I'd say that was my main takeaway from Christmas.
Have a smaller fridge. Or don't have a fridge.
Yeah. Gabby, go on.
Yeah.
Well, over Christmas was a mix for me, environmentally, because I went back to work and...
Oh, we know how you feel about that.
We know how I feel
about... undisclosed.
At my undisclosed work location and their use of plastic.
The true fans will know.
The true fans will know.
Because I've never said it live on air.
Never said it live on air. We've never had to bleep it out. So my undisclosed place of work, I struggle with like the amount of plastic waste that I am actively involved in. Although I don't have a choice, I am actively involved in it. Yeah. I am physically putting it in a bin and dealing with that. But I have to say, as a family unit, we were really good, like you, Erin, on food waste this year, because we went out for Christmas lunch, which was new and exciting. It was really, really nice. But it meant actually we didn't have like a massively stocked full fridge of stuff that's going to go off, and we weren't eating turkey for 6 days afterwards.
Yeah.
We just had like lots of snacks and chocolate and stuff. And I think generally we did pretty well also on the present front this year. We had a lot less gifts, but of higher quality, which was very nice. Do you know what I mean? It felt a lot less wasteful because I don't think anyone got things that they didn't like or wouldn't use. I think it was very controlled gift giving, and it was all wrapped lovingly by my mother in sustainable wrapping paper.
Mums are so into the sustainable wrapping paper.
They're so into it.
All my aunts and everything like that. Everyone just wants to use the paper.
Yeah, the paper. It didn't even come wrapped in a wrapped around a tube.
Oh, like a plastic film.
Yeah, so it didn't have a plastic film. It didn't come like wrapped around a tube. It was actually folded.
Oh.
Yeah, I will get mum to send us
links
and the names of where she got this wrapping paper, because it was so nice. And the same Christmas cards from the same place, all sustainably and ethically sourced, really good for the environment. And I think my mum especially, she's making massive moves in not buying stuff at Christmas, because it's really easy to do, especially when you've got younger children.
Yes. Oh yeah,
do you know 100%. What I mean? But like now me and my sister are older, like we're all adults. Again, less gifts of higher quality, wrapped in super sustainable wrapping paper, sustainable gifts, a lot less food in the house that could possibly be wasted. So I think like for me, obviously I worked over Christmas and that was quite unsustainable, but what I could personally be involved in was very sustainable. Apart from the fact I flew to Berlin, but we don't have to talk about that.
Yeah, we'll just keep moving. Don't have to talk about that, as Gabby says.
Yeah, because happiness. I'd like to be happy, and I wanted to go to Berlin. So
that's what we always advocate for here on Eco Frenzy, is that we want you to be happy and sustainable. Don't make a change to your life if you're going to be unhappy.
Yeah, just make changes where you can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. It is currently 12 minutes past 3.
Ooh. I think it's time for a song.
And time for a song.
What is our big topic today?
Oh, it's pollution.
It's pollution.
This is URN.
Welcome back to Eco Frenzy. We have told you already about our Christmases and what we've noticed. If you've missed part of our chat and you want to listen to it, what can they do?
they can get us up on Spotify or Apple Music to listen to our podcast. If you just type in Eco-Frenzy URN, it will arrive and you can listen to this episode, which will come out on Wednesday, and all previous episodes as well.
Wow.
It's very exciting.
It is indeed. But let's continue on today's topic. So we already told you that we're going to do a bit of pollution today, because we haven't done pollution. We haven't spoken about it much on Eco-Frenzy before as a topic itself. And it's quite an important one, because I think it's one that people are really aware of their pollution, because we like to talk about it. And especially air pollution has become a very big thing in places like London, you know, where we have the congestion charges to try and tackle it. But we've got some, I believe we've got some stats. Am I right in saying?
Yes.
Is it time for some stats?
It is time for some stats.
Ooh. Is it time for some... Hang on.
Stats. Stats. Georgia has all of them.
Oh, no. She's clicking things.
I got it. Right. But we do have stats. Georgia, are you ready?
I don't know if I'm ready. I am actually sort of ready. It's not... Well, I guess it's more a fact. Which is so disappointing. I need another ident for facts.
Facts.
Georgia has all of them. So basically this week, our dearly beloved environmental secretary, Theresa Coffey, insert sigh here, has admitted that we will not, as the UK, we will not achieve our air pollution targets that we have initially put in place, which is 10 micrograms of fine particulate matter per cubic meter of air by 2030. And basically she says we're not going to be able to make it, so they're just going to change the target to something that's achievable, which I think is a bit counterintuitive, because it basically means they don't have to do anything and we'll achieve the target. But quite a lot of air pollution experts from various institutes like King's College London and Imperial College London have said that it's quite easy for us to achieve the original target if we took stronger action on sources of pollution like diesel cars and wood burning. So they've said like it's pretty easy, we could do it if we did anything about it, but we're not doing anything about it, so instead they're just going to change the target so we achieve it, which is just seems silly to me, I mean, what do I know?
Yeah, it does seem a bit bizarre. I do understand to an extent the idea of you want targets that are attainable and reachable, because if you reach your targets it motivates you to then create new targets and to actually work your way down. And I do think we do see a lot of the time with environmental targets the issue is they set them quite long term because it does take time to come into effect, but they are a little bit too ambitious, and actually maybe it makes sense to have a lot less ambitious targets but more frequently. So you know, every sort of 5 years it should be we've reduced it by this much. And even within that, they probably, the governments, etc., have these more internal targets, but the big ones they show to the public, like that by 2030, we'll do this. And that never happens. And they're never on track for it, which is frustrating. So I understand why we'd want to have targets that are going to be attainable and reachable, so that it motivates people to feel like what they're doing is actually changing something and positive things are going on. However, it's the fact that scientists are saying that it is attainable is the thing that doesn't make sense to me, because you've made this your target, you've clearly set out this is your goal, and people are telling you this is how you can achieve your goal and you're ignoring it.
Yeah, and to make these targets, often they'll have to create a roadmap alongside it, because they can't just say, oh yeah, you know, we're going to do this in the future. It needs to be, okay, we've got this roadmap, this is how we're going to do it, because that's how you create that target. You can't just pick a number out of the thin air. So they'll know what they need to do, but they're just openly admitting that they're not going to do it. But it also gives a sense of that it's they're just making it a future government's problem.
Yeah, which I think is, that is a common issue within politics generally, of like, oh, we can't like sort this out, so we're going to pass it on to the next government, possibly a government formed of the current opposition, and then just blame them for it.
Yeah.
Which is just, it's, I mean, it's not an insane political tactic, but it's not great for the environment.
No, it's again, it's using the environment as a political strategy, in which we've had many conversations about how it shouldn't be, because
it's something that affects everyone regardless of what party you're a part of, and particularly in the UK where climate denial is not such a huge thing, you'd think that they'd at least agree on it enough to sort it out.
Yes, and certainly air pollution is something that affects everyone. There's a fact, a stat actually.
A stat? With Georgia?
I know, scandalous. That currently air pollution causes 36,000 premature deaths every year in the UK. So that is affecting everyone.
Yeah, definitely. And something that has come to like attention recently with the opening of the Elizabeth line on the tube is, so a young woman innovator has won the top award for developing software to map the tube routes with the cleanest air. Great, love it. Basically, the UK safe limit for healthy air is to have fewer than 25 small particles in a cubic metre of air, as Georgia said earlier. So just important, that one. So this lady, she created, she mapped on the map which were the tube lines with the worst like air pollution. And the example she used, so a passenger travelling from North Harrow Tube Station to Canary Wharf, which is a lot of people's business destination. If you go the quickest way via the Jubilee line, then you face pollution that is 220 particles per cubic metre.
That's like 10 times the safe limit, basically.
Yeah, basically 10 times the safe limit.
It's 20 times.
20, yeah, 20 times. Oh, yeah, it's 220 times the safe limit.
It's 10 is the safe.
No, yeah. 20 was the safe.
Oh. 25 is the safe, and this is 220 particles per cubic metre.
I'm going to say, guys, I might not be the stats girl, but I am the maths girl.
Okay. She is the maths girl.
That is very true.
And if you take a slower route and stay on the Metropolitan line, you'll face pollution of 50 particles per cubic metre.
Still over.
Which is still over the safe limit.
Mm. But a lot less over.
A lot less over. So it's basically with the Elizabeth line has a lot better ventilation, all of that, but is not necessarily as accessible to the business district.
Yes.
Which is the tube line that people are taking every day, twice a day. The majority of people, they're taking that five times a week, twice a day, and they're breathing in 220 particles per cubic metre of pollution. We cannot argue that that is not affecting people.
Yeah. 100%.
It's, considering the safe bit, the safe limit is 25, which is just insane. I mean, I definitely recommend reading up on her. She's been given a big grant to develop this software. Amazing. We love also women in software development, women in business.
Women in STEM.
Women in STEM.
And I also like the fact that it's usable and it is a foreseeable thing that can be used more. I know Google, I think it is, Google Maps now has, to some extent, a measure of how the greenest route you can take, which tends to be walking or cycling, but it's still showing you, for example, oh, is it better for me to take the bus or is it better for me to take the tram in this city? And I really like that because it's just giving people more information, and knowing this information actually is the easiest way to make people change, because if you give them the numbers and it's readily available, then they're going to change them, because air pollution is bad for you. It's not like, you know, this is bad for the environment. It's bad for everyone individually.
Mm. Yeah, it's bad for your health.
It's so bad.
It's so bad for your health. Like, as you were saying, Georgia, 36,000 people in the UK die from related air pollution.
And just looking on the, like, asthma, there's an Asthma and Lung UK website, which is for, obviously, people who have sort of respiratory issues, but this can kind of be taken as a whole. They've got some advice on what to do to reduce your amount of air pollution. And one of the things they say is stay away from pollution hotspots, such as like main roads and busy junctions, and find ways to go to work. Leave to go to work a little bit earlier if you have to drive, because there'll be less cars about, so there'll be less pollution just in the air and readily available. So if this is something that you're either personally, you suffer from some sort of respiratory, I don't know, illness, I don't know quite how to categorize that whole category, so I hope I'm saying, I don't mean to offend or upset anyone with what I'm saying, but if that's a concern for you, or if just generally your health is a concern for whatever reason, then that definitely it's a good website to check out, because they've got a couple tips. But it is very much things like just stay away from pollution, because sadly there's nothing more you can do. But this is giving people access to that information to help them make these informed choices, which is great to see.
Because we now know that the three worst tube stations for air pollution on the London Underground is Oxford Circus, Waterloo and London Bridge.
Which is so sad, because I love Waterloo.
Yeah, literally to say, which is probably the most used ones.
Absolutely. I mean, I always use Oxford Circus when I go to London. Always. Wild. And I think it's, you know, we're supporting the use of public transport environmentally.
Yeah.
It's great. Love using public transport. The tube is great for that, particularly in London where there is lots of heavy traffic. But yet you're paying a price in a different way. You're paying a price by using some really, I mean, frankly, dangerous, especially if you're someone with a respiratory issue, like 220 particles per cubic meter of air pollution.
Mm.
So it's, I think we talk about it quite a lot, of that we can do really great things for the environment, but there always seems to be another price to pay, whether that's a monetary price or like air pollution price or whatever. It's like we suggest all of these things, but then there's always just seems to be like a caveat to it, where it's like, oh, you can do this, but take into account that this also does this thing, or this is going to cost you more money. And it's, I don't know, it's a bit disheartening sometimes. And it's one of these things, like, you've just got to make the right choice for you, and you cannot do everything. You just can't.
You can't. Exactly. And I think the new line, was it the Elizabeth line, hasn't that got new air filtration systems in it?
Yes. So from the University of Surrey, they have stated that better ventilation is the key for London's underground to manage its air quality, and used the Elizabeth line as an example for that. And it's funded by the Inhale project, which is a project that's working on air pollution, but particularly in London, and the Global Centre for Clear Air Research. And basically that this air pollution can be managed, but it's really difficult to do it on old lines. So the Piccadilly line, District and the Circle lines, one, they're very underground, and also they're just old. Like, you can't put these like air filtration systems in because they've got buildings on top of them.
Yeah, it's like this, the infrastructure's already there. Yeah,
you can't change it, basically.
But isn't that going to make it, it's only going to get worse then?
Yeah, so they need to figure out a way to change it, but they are going to have to put the money into doing that, and having just built the Elizabeth line, I don't see TfL doing that for a very long time.
And with the current train strikes, if they're not going to give their workers a pay rise, they're not going to invest in these systems, are they?
There are a lot of issues about that anyway. We've had a couple messages in. Someone has said, what about having later opening times so people are more inclined to walk? I'm not sure about that one, because I think once it's dark out, people are going to want to take taxis and things like that, and that's when typically less people are driving. So although they are obviously committing pollution, contributing, that's the word, it might not be exactly the same, and it won't be having that sort of add-on effect, which is what it's in the air right now. I'd love to know more about how long actually pollution stays in the air, and sort of the process about that, and maybe the science of it. And I think that's something maybe we'll look into for a future episode, because I don't know a lot about sort of what they try and do to lower the pollution levels, other than it seems to be the way forward is just saying, please, can you stop polluting?
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't seem like they're saying much else. And there's also been a comment about in London, obviously we don't live in London, we're not too well versed on London and how it works all the time, but someone says, what about in London having more boats? I have taken the Uber boat, and it's also, they just have like the boat taxi system, I guess. I would imagine, because the Thames is just a boat river, it's dirty, you don't have proper wildlife in it, that
wildlife can't exist.
Someone's called it the Thames Clipper, so I'm assuming that's what it's called.
That is called the Thames Clipper.
Yes. So I have taken it, and it was really quick and really useful, and it was actually quite fun. And I think maybe because you're out in the open, it might be not as bad, because there's the sort of natural filtration of wind. Wind helps spread out the particles, whereas when you're underground, I think that's why it gets so bad in some of the stations, is because it doesn't have that filtration or that, like any sort of anti-pollution measures there.
They also, wind has just reminded me, if you take the circle line, the wind and the noise that comes from the circle line, they've actually seen is affecting people's hearing.
Yeah,
because it's so loud. The circle line. I might be wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong.
It might be the brown one.
Bakerloo.
It might be Bakerloo.
I can't remember.
Is that it's so noisy that it's actually affecting over people's hearing. So not only can you not breathe, you also can't hear.
Yeah, it's kind
of basically stop taking the tube. My sister who lives in London, they barely take the tube. They take the bus everywhere. It's also a lot cheaper these days.
It's really interesting. Someone says, fun fact about the circle line, it's a circle. Thank you for the contribution there. That is from, I believe, Dom in Bristol.
It's from Dom in Bristol.
Shout out to Dom and Catherine in Bristol. Yes, the circle line is in fact a circle, which is how it was so aptly named.
Anyway, we're laughing at all of your comments being sent in on the message. So keep them coming.
We're loving it.
But I think
we've got a song now. This one goes out to Cara. It's her pick. She is here with us in the studio. We're not letting her talk though. It's eco-frenzy time.
She is listening though, and we did let her pick a song. Da, da, da,
da, da. Let's go, go girls.
You're listening to Eco-Frenzy,
University Radio Nottingham's official sustainability podcast.
Listen live on Saturdays from 3 to 4 p.m. on urn1350.net.
DJ!
This is URN
University
Radio Nottingham.
Welcome back to Eco Frenzy. We've got 20 minutes left on air with you, and hopefully you've been enjoying the show so far. If you have, give us a cheeky follow. URN Eco Frenzy URN on Instagram.
Dear Lord.
Jeez, I know. Normally Lord. I get it right.
Anyway, 3 years you've been doing this, Erin.
Yeah, 3 years we've had that Instagram
Goodness.
Handle.
Anyway, so we're going to move on to a little bit about LGBTQIA plus History Month and the environment and the gays.
And quite frankly, I'm going to pass it straight over to Georgia.
Because she knows these things.
Because she knows these things.
I know these things.
And also, I will just put out there that URN did a whole LGBTQ plus History Month special on Wednesday, which we all attended in some format.
Yeah.
It was amazing. I'm sure their clips and things will be making their way onto various Instagrams shortly. If you didn't catch it, talk to us about the environment, Georgia.
Ooh, okay. So as we already mentioned in the show, that actually there's been quite a lot of environmental activism done by the gays. And we use the gays as a really inclusive term. It's referencing everyone in the community.
Absolutely.
Of LGBTQIA+.
To be honest, the reason I sometimes say the gays is because I really trip over my words when I say LGBTQIA+. Or I have to do it and it sounds like that. So we mean it in a positive, inclusive way.
Yes.
No other way. It's just because it's so hard to go LGBTQ. And they can both see me right now. I'm trying to remember. I've said the letters so many times, but I struggle.
We all struggle to speak on Eco-Frenzy, just generally.
And dyslexia as well. I'm going to get those letters mixed up.
Yeah.
It's rough out there, guys.
It's rough for us in the studio today. It's rough.
It really is. But yeah, there's been a lot of interlinking with the causes and activists activating. That's not the right word. Supporting both causes.
I support that. The activists activating. I think that is a positive. I'd like to think that we're activists activating in our own special way.
Yeah. Aww. Aww. That's really sweet. Anyway.
I feel like an ingredient, like, you know, when you have you need to activate that ingredient in, like, your skincare routine.
You need to activate the yeast
when you make bread. What they always say.
Activate the activism. Anyway, and how did they activate the activism, Georgia?
So, I would like to talk about one person in particular who is probably credited with writing the first ever viral environmental book, and it is Rachel Carson. So she was a renowned nature author and former marine biologist for the US Fish and Wildlife Service. And while she was working at the marine area in the US government, she wrote a book, and it's called Silent Spring, which is quite a famous book. I personally have read it. Gabby, you read it.
Yeah, I had to read it for, or at least sections of it for my degree. I think it gets mentioned during my history and my politics degree at least once a month. I think it gets mentioned in some form. It is truly iconic. And
see, for me, it's the financial crisis.
Yeah, for Erin, it's the financial crisis. For me, it's Science Ring, just because it was so, even if we're not talking about the environment, it is such a pivotal, influential piece of academic writing.
Yes, 100%.
But that is targeted at the normal person. It's a really unique piece of academic writing. It's also very old, published September 27th, 1962.
Yes.
So it's been kicking for a long time and is still relevant today.
I'd say for probably just about as long as Georgia.
Yeah, just not quite, though.
Not quite, guys.
Remember, Georgia is old.
Remember how old I am, guys.
Ancient.
There's literally dust coming off of me. I'm so old. So basically, this book was trying to alert the public on the widespread use of DDT, which is a pesticide. And basically, everyone used it because it was this miracle pesticide that killed everything. But what they didn't realise that it was also killing them.
Yeah, it was also killing everything. Yeah. And when it said it truly meant everything. It did what it said on the tin.
Yeah.
Human health.
Animals, the environment,
everything. Whole ecosystems, gone.
Environmental destruction.
It was a rough one.
Yeah.
I think that's a good way of putting it. It was a rough one.
So
what was the fallout of the book then?
Banned. It was banned! Because Welcome to America, well, they'll ban any piece of literature that doesn't support the government and all the government's choices. So it was deemed offensive, which I don't know how a book on the environment can be offensive. So it was, it was banned because they didn't like that she was calling out the use of this pesticide that saved them a lot of money and a lot of time because it just killed everything. Basically, they could just use one thing.
And there were also, their response was like, oh, this book's come out, everyone's read it, everyone's sort of realising it's bad, we're going to ban it and then release propaganda saying that it's safe. Like, they had an advert that said, so safe you can eat it. Another one that said, let's put it everywhere.
Are they recommending you eat pesticides? I'm sorry, have I just heard you correctly? Yeah. The 60s was a wild, wild time. They were just allowed to do that, which baffles me. Like, I know we struggle with stuff now, like fake news and all of that, but I have enough faith to think that they wouldn't be able to tell people that you can eat pesticide these days. But in the 1960s America, gully, that's what they were doing.
Yes,
they were like, it's fine to have it all over your food. Just eat it. You'll be fine.
You'll be fine. Literally, they had this whole, like, cartoon series with, like, an apple and a cow, and it was like, DDT is good for me.
So catchy. I know. I'm not gonna lie.
They really knew how to get people. So that was awful that Rachel had a bunch of evidence. She did insane amount of research because she did work for the government, so she knew, and she knew that they knew. And that was the fallout of it. So she's often attributed to paving the way for the modern day environmental movement. But as this is LGBTQ+, that's the right letters.
Yeah.
History Month, she, little known fact that she was also gay, which is great.
Yeah. I think also like gay representation.
Yeah. In science. She was in a decade-long relationship with someone called Dorothy Freeman. They wrote to each other constantly and confessed their love to one another in really romantic letters. And you can actually read these letters online. So I would recommend reading them because they're extraordinary poetry, detailed letters confessing their love for one another. And it's just a very sweet piece of queer writing, which is definitely worth a read. But obviously it was the 1960s, so the relationship was kept a secret. And also Dorothy was married. So they used to send each other letters, and when they'd send each other letters, they'd send two letters, one which was to read out to the family so that they would pretend that was the main letter. So for Dorothy, it would be to read to her husband saying, oh, this is what Rachel's doing. And for Rachel, it would be to talk to her like parents who she lived with at the time. And then they'd have a secret hidden letter for each other.
Aww. It's sad and iconic at the same time.
I know. And they labelled their secret letter called the Dropbox, which is great because we now have a technology called the Dropbox.
Yeah.
I'm like, excuse me, I don't know who owns Dropbox, but did you steal the name?
Yeah, I think it's also really... I was just looking her up, but I think it's also really sad that she died only 2 years after the publishing of Silent Spring while it was still being covered up.
Yes.
Basically, she didn't live to see...
what it became.
The absolute, monumental effect that she had, not just on the environment, but on, academia as well. It's something that we discuss in my degree, is that... she had a monumental effect on the accessibility of academia and on women in academia as well, and that she, sadly she didn't live to see the fact that even now in 2023 we are sat here discussing her book and the importance of her book.
Yes. Yeah. And it's really, really tragic. And it's also tragic because at the time she was often in where she worked, she was always being discredited because she was a woman. And you can read this in her letters, while she really wanted to make her relationship as public as they could at the time, she felt that she had to keep it a secret because if people knew that she was gay and a woman, that she would never be trusted again in the scientific space. And obviously her work was so valuable to her that she was worried that if she sort of came out relatively publicly, that Silent Spring would just be buried and wouldn't have the impact that obviously we know later did.
It's almost like the sacrifices she made for the environment.
Yes.
To the detriment of her relationship was insane, and that she really took it so seriously. And I think it's, it's credited in the creation of the Environmental Protection Agency by the Nixon administration in 1970, along with various other acts, including the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide and Rodenticide Act is related to her work. In the 1980s, the policies of the Reagan administration emphasised environmental policies and adoption in response to her work. But it's sad that she didn't get to live to see those things happening.
Yeah.
But she does become officially credited and officially recognised within the US and by the US government, which I think is important.
Really important.
Considering their initial reaction to her book.
Yeah. And I'm just so glad that she's not only a queer icon, but also an environmental icon. And it just shows that the matching of the two are interlinked.
Yeah. And also, another fun thing, for LGBTQ plus History Month, if you've seen the film Pride, one of my favourite quotes from there is this lovely Welsh lady asking some lesbians, is it true you're all vegetarians? And they turn around and go, we're actually vegans. Which is and just another fun,
I love that.
We're actually, it's much better for the environment, vegans.
We're better than you thought.
Yeah, exactly, which I think is... And on a little funny note, and I do recommend the film as my recommendation for LGBTQ plus History Month, Pride is my recommendation.
Yes.
For that.
Definitely. And it is behind the lens is the theme. So it's all about the people working behind the cameras, behind the lenses. So that's your directors, your makeup artists, your cinematographers, your people just on set for all your favourite productions. So many of them are queer and in the best way possible. And it's really important to celebrate not just the people whose names we know and the people who we see.
Agreed.
Because there are so many people who aren't the famous ones who are just, your everyday people who are just as valid and just as important. And their histories should also be remembered. So if you have a little bit of time, do a little bit of research, find a director maybe who is queer and watch one of their films this month. Do what you can. And even if it's just that, it's a lovely thing to do. And it's probably going to be a great film.
It almost certainly is. Now, slight change of pace. Yes. The last 10 minutes of our show.
Weirdly, we're talking football.
I know. It's hard for us.
It's terrible, but...
We do get to plug a previous episode, though. If you want to listen to our thoughts on the World Cup being held in Qatar and the environmental effects of that, you can head to the They Think It's All Doha podcast or our podcast stream. It's on both, I believe, to listen to us chat with Dom Allen about Qatar and the environmental effects of the World Cup.
Yes, and I think previously we've spoken a bit about sports and the environment, an episode from, I think it was about April last year.
Yeah, it's a we did like a hobbies episode. Hobbies. It was actually, it's a positive one. It's actually quite nice.
Yes, but what's going on this weekend in football? It's Green Football Weekend. What does that mean? Well, it means everyone is trying to raise a little bit of awareness this week for the environment. There'll be some footballers wearing green armbands during things like the Premier League, EFL and the Women's Super League for games happening on Saturday and Sunday. And it's all about some clubs and players and also fans wanting to be involved in tackling climate change and by changing their, by reducing their environmental impacts. One of the key figures of this who's kind of been talking about it is a Brentford football player, his last name is Ben Mee, and he has been saying that he's become really interested in reducing his carbon footprint, and that's he's attributed that to having children and thinking about what their future could be. And I think that's a common theme we see with adults as you get into maybe into that age where you start having kids or family members start having kids, then you go, oh, there is a future that it not just my future matters, there's future of my loved ones matters. And I think it helps when they're all a lot younger than you. And you want to make sure that it's a good future and a positive one. And there is space for them in it. So big shout out to all the footballers taking part in that and fans and everyone doing that. Yeah. And we really, really appreciate it. And as much as it's not going to solve anything, the fact it's bringing awareness. And football, we don't tend to think of as something so environmentally friendly, but we already have clubs like Forest Green Rovers, yeah, who all their players are vegan. It's part of their contracts. And actually, they might not be vegan. It might be plant-based. I'm not entirely sure the wording of it, but they very much have the environment in mind. And I believe they are carbon neutral as a club or very much working towards it and it's part of their sort of manifesto.
Oh, that's nice.
That's nice. I didn't know about that.
Yeah, it's Forest positive. Green Rovers. Don't know where in the country they're based, but it's different to Nottingham Forest.
Well, yeah, I was going to ask that question.
Yeah, completely different team.
But I think there's a very good BBC Sport article about Green Football Weekend, what are clubs, players and fans doing, which will also give some information on if you are a football fan, what can you do. I know one of the things we speak about is if you're going to an away game, you getting a bus with all the other fans.
It's quite a nice thing to do.
One, it's a nice social thing. You get to know some new people, some other fans. And also it reduces that carbon footprint.
It does indeed. And it's so convenient because they'll take you from your ground to the next ground. You know, it's nice and easy and they'll bring you back. You don't have to worry about getting the train home. And as we say, it just works. It just works.
Yeah.
So I think we have to wrap up this episode a little bit with our final thoughts. I'm giving us a minute or two for final thoughts this week.
She knows that's how quite to treat
lot.
Us.
I that's quite a lot of time.
Georgia, I'm going to come over to you first. Final thought of the episode.
Gay rights.
Very good thought. Gabby.
Gay rights and the environment.
Okay, all right.
I know, not to one-up you there, Georgia.
It sort of feels like that.
I love how for once I told you both we have 2 minutes or something left to talk and you went, I will say this in the fewest words possible.
We truly will.
But we've got a lot to say about this final song,
though. We have so much to say about this final song.
I would like to say my final thoughts. Gay rights is also a good one, and environmentalism. And you know what? I'll even chuck in there. Football isn't always bad.
Oh,
isn't always the key wording there.
Our final song is not a reflection of the views of Eco Frenzy. We do not believe in driving.
But if you are going to drive,
put this song on.
You've got to at least listen to this song once.
Yes.
As I think me and Georgia do every time we drive somewhere, at least once, I think sometimes twice.
Sometimes I just put it on repeat.
On repeat to get from point A to point B.
This is certainly the song of the Christmas period, I'd
say. It is absolutely the song
Eco
of the
Frenzy.
Christmas period for
Eco Frenzy's final thought today is, Gabby,
Shut Up and Drive by Rihanna.
Woo!